Hello, my darling, and welcome to today's story time. Today we return to Project Utopia, and we will do several chapters again like last time because some of them are fairly short. And now, on with our story time. Chapter 4. Her eyes followed Frank as he worked, moving around her office with the gauge. He hadn't mentioned anything about her signal earlier, but she guessed he was a busy man. And if she didn't get down to the lab to install the implants, the clone probably would, and she'd be out all the results. If she was going to do this, she wanted everything carefully documented. She needed proof. At the very least, she wanted to publish the results. She hesitated at the door. I don't need anything fixed. What are you doing, Frank? Frank's bushy eyebrows knotted together. Didn't say anything needed fixin'. Samantha dismissed his answer as he held his gauge up high. She glanced at the clock. It was already after 1. She had to be down in the lab to examine the clones before their implantation in just a few minutes. She grabbed her lab coat, slipping her arms through the sleeves. I have to leave. Will you be all right in here, Frank? Frank grunted. Don't you worry about a thing. I've got my instructions. Samantha grabbed her lab bag and clipboard and headed for the door. Will it hurt? Megan 6 Alpha asked. Her brow was bunched together in fear. She dry-washed her hands in her lap as she watched Samantha pumping the blood pressure cuff on her upper arm. Samantha smiled. Only a little. She prepped the area above the vein on Megan's arm. But you can look away if you don't like needles. Megan closed her eyes tightly as Samantha reached for her needle. It seemed odd that Megan would demonstrate a fear of needles. One never knew how much the clones had been exposed to and how they would react to different things. Megan acted like a young girl, even though she looked nearly 30. Samantha gently stuck the needle into Megan's flesh, drawing out the blood. It was disorienting, sometimes, seeing the girls. Mark had brought them all to dinner. He had kissed them at her kitchen table, and they had giggled, complimenting her on her cooking. Now, they remembered none of that. Even though she knew the answer based on Megan's name, Samantha thought it best to get the girl talking, to take away her nervousness while she gathered what she needed. How old are you, Megan? Megan grinned, swinging her legs, but she kept her eyes squeezed, tightly closed. I just turned 6. She tipped her head back to where Sally, 5 Echo, and Tracy, 2 Zulu, sat nervously whispering to each other. Sally's a year younger than me, and Tracy is of the final version. She's 2. Samantha nodded as Megan gushed about one of the guards, Steven 6 Bravo, who she had developed a crush on. Intelli Inc. had started the cloning process, taking originals for use more than 8 years ago, not long after the United States Constitution was abolished and the One World Order research laws were established. The oldest versions had proven problematic for corporate and had to be destroyed immediately while a new version was cloned. She drew blood from Megan's arm carefully, taking a moment to label the vial with a marker. She smiled, rubbing Megan's shoulders. See, you're done. Megan's eyes went wide. Wow, you're good at that. She took a seat next to Tracy as Sally stepped forward to get her blood drawn. When she was done with all the girls, she recorded her results on her clipboard just as Steven pushed through the door with a metal cart. He lifted a small metal box from the second shelf on the cart as Samantha set her vials carefully on the top shelf. He grinned at Megan before noting the results on Samantha's clipboard. Megan was blushing furiously. Hi, Steven, she giggled. Sally nudged her in the side as Tracy whispered in her ear. The atmosphere was enthusiastic, and Samantha found herself smiling at the exchange. Megan was so sweet. and the way they acted around Stephen made her think of being in junior high and really liking a boy for the first time. She remembered well the heady crush at seeing Tom, her first real crush in the halls, and the way she couldn't stop her cheeks from flushing red. Tom hadn't taken her seriously, though, and hadn't returned her flirtations as Stephen seemed to be doing with Megan. The clones were different. Stephen wouldn't have been given that boyish tendency to be mean to the girl that he liked, because that was learned behavior. Learned behavior of any sort would have been removed during the cloning process to ensure the clones were as pliable as possible for their new environment. They were, essentially, blank slates, designed to be completely open to every new situation or experience. Stephen was still grinning as he handed Samantha the small metal box. He looked at his own notes before speaking. "This contains the biochips, one for each. I'll take the vials after the implantations." He shrugged a shoulder. "I have to watch." Samantha plucked the first syringe that held a biochip from the box. It was meant to be implanted directly below the skin on the right hand, with care, to avoid the bloodstream. She tested the syringe as Stephen watched. Megan held her right hand out, palm down. "Me first," she said bravely, her eyes on Stephen. Samantha smiled her encouragement, and then eased the needle into the soft flesh of Megan's hand. She did the same to Tracy and Sally. Samantha added notes to her lab book as the girls waited silently. "Come and get me 3 hours from now, Stephen," she said. He nodded his assent and took his post to wait in the room with the girls. Walking back to her office, Samantha felt mixed emotions at what she was doing. Her research identified that the implants were likely to go horribly wrong within the host. And yet, she wouldn't be the scientist she was if she walked away from the project based upon her growing moral ethics. A scientist often found themselves in a situation like this. She knew she had to continue with the project, but she feared the cost. Just this morning, implanted clones had gone berserk and eaten their guards. As she strode down the hallway, Samantha felt a pang of anxiety for Stephen. Would he be alive when she returned? "Ridiculous," she spoke aloud, literally shaking her head at the thought. Even if that was the outcome when she returned to her lab, feeling such emotions over the destruction of a clone was unnecessary, and even frowned upon. When World War III was about to erupt in 2063, clones were destroyed en masse. They were meaningless, except as property, and meant little for the future of mankind. A means to an end, available where actual human beings had neither the time nor the willpower to achieve what a clone would. Realistically, Samantha told herself, they were nothing more than robots, meant to serve their purpose, and then to be destroyed when their value ran out. Chapter 5. Mark sat behind his desk, tapping his fingers against the hard wood as he watched Dr. Jones, the head of corporate, storm into his office without knocking. He looked up at the man, keeping the annoyance from his voice at the intrusion. "What can I do for you, sir?" Dr. Jones blustered about the room before stopping near the far window. It was clear that he had no intention of sitting. "Where is my jump drive?" Mark frowned, spreading his hands before himself. "I don't have it, sir." "It was in the conference room, but now it's gone." He tossed a white jump drive onto Mark's desk. "This rabble was all that I found." Mark picked it up. "Well, whose is this then?" Dr. Jones's cheeks flushed red. "I don't know. Do I look like I have time to dig through foolish files? You idiot." Mark nodded, dimly wondering what was so important about the missing drive. "I'm sorry, sir. Of course you don't have the time. What can I do for you?" Dr. Jones was silent for a long moment, but the look he gave Mark left no question as to what he wanted. find my drive, he said, or lose your job. That easy enough for you? Mark forced his face into one of assurance. Of course, sir. I understand. Dr. Jones started heading for the door. At the door frame, he turned, his voice losing its edge. Tell the girl, Mark. She's getting too close to the truth. Mark shrugged innocently. The truth, sir. Crossing his arms over his barrel chest, Dr. Jones made a menacing figure as he sneered. Don't cross me. You screwed her once, and you'll have the first rights at screwing her again. You tell her the truth. He let out a tired sigh. But find my jump drive first, all right? Nodding, Mark watched as Dr. Jones turned on a heel and left his office. He couldn't do as Dr. Jones asked, not just yet. He groaned at his new task, sliding the jump drive into the USB port on his computer, reasoning that the owner of this drive must have taken Dr. Jones's by mistake. Chapter 6. Exactly 3 hours after leaving the lab, Stephen appeared at her office door. It's time, Dr. Hargrove. Samantha smiled to herself. Just like clockwork. Thanks, Stephen. How did the girls do? He held up his lab book, reviewing notes. About 3 minutes in, they started giggling about a guard named Tony. At 4 minutes in, Sally started teasing Tracy for liking Tony. She held up a hand. Sometimes clones were too diligent. Will you make a copy of your report and meet me back down at the lab? She asked. He nodded his assent and rushed to do as she requested. It was hard sometimes, she thought, to think of them as actual humans. She felt silly now, or even giving that notion a thought earlier. Back down in the lab, all 3 girls claimed to be perfectly fine, so Samantha prepped their arms to collect a final sample from after implantation. After placing the vials carefully next to the others on the cart, Samantha turned to Stephen. Please tell Dr. Clements that there appear to be no adverse effects from the implant, and that before and after results have been clearly marked for comparison. Yes, ma'am, he said, then turned to wheel the cart from the lab. Almost as an afterthought, Stephen turned and brazenly blew a kiss to Megan. Samantha smiled to herself as Megan flushed a deep red. The clones were charming. Chapter 7. Samantha drove home that evening, fighting frustration. Something nagged at her, but she couldn't pinpoint the exact cause. Although she had done nothing to find out more about Ryan, she knew that wasn't it. Ryan was a loyal friend and trusted employee, but people were taken as originals all the time. She was long past feeling sorrow for the Chosen. A large part of the success of the People's Parliament and the New World Order lay in the utilization of chosen people who become originals. In many ways, it was an honor, and she knew that Ryan's family would be well compensated. They'd never have to work again, if that was their choice. Because of Ryan's sacrifice to the greater good, his family would be set for life. But still, something else nagged at her. Something deeper. Thinking back on her day, she wondered if it was the way Stephen had learned how to flirt with the female clones. That had to be a flaw within the 6th version. She should document her observations. Within every generation, there were flaws, and probably always would be. But that's why new originals were regularly chosen, to keep working out the flaws until one day the clone truly would be nothing more than a very useful commodity. Samantha flicked on her turn signal as she left the freeway. One thing still bothered her. Why had she smiled at the clone's behavior? Really, that was stupid of her. There was simply no reason that she should feel an emotional connection to them. Down that path, my trouble. Since the People's Parliament had gained power, one major change had occurred throughout the country. entertainment was far more prevalent than ever before. Just about every street corner boasted at least one bar or strip club, and many businesses closed at night, only to become happening nightclubs in the after hours. People found more reasons than ever before to drink heavily and party hard. And Samantha was no exception. She was about to head straight home, but the thought of sitting on the couch with Charlie for the next few hours was almost enough to send her mind into depression. After a long day, she needed something far more satisfying to help her unwind. She considered her options for only a moment before turning into the parking lot of a bar and grill. Their burgers were the best on this side of the freeway, and she could easily unwind with a casual game of pool. Waving at the hostess, a Megan clone, she noted, she was directed to an empty booth near the far end of the bar. With a sigh of relief, she tried to let the day go. It could have been worse, she reflected. Her presentation didn't go as planned, and the clone test subjects from the prior state tests had had an unfortunate accident. But she was able to implant the new subjects and document her research. At least there was that. "What can I get you, honey?" chimed Megan. "Whiskey and Coke, please," Samantha replied. "And your Monday special. Might as well have dinner while she was out." Megan wrote the order on her purple scratch pad and then scurried to the bar to place the order. Samantha reached into her purse and found that she had missed a text from a number not listed in her contacts. Feeling dizzy, she let out an involuntary whimper, then reread the text four times before snatching up her purse and bolting from the bar. Getting in her car, she careened wildly out of the parking lot, nearly grazing the bar's dumpster. As she flicked on her blinker to enter the flow of traffic, she reflected that this was the first time in her life she'd ever been truly terrified. Chapter 8. Charlie sank into the plush comfort of the couch with a large bowl of popcorn coated in thick layers of butter on his lap. He was proud of the way he'd handled Elaine at the office, and Josh, the boss's nephew, had acted like a man and taken his consequences without complaint. The kid looked promising. And after today, if Charlie had his way, he'd start grooming the youth for junior associate before the month was over. They needed men like Josh, who could take responsibility and smooth over tough situations. The realm of genetic engineering was traditionally not one of professional, social behavior. A man like Josh could help manifest change, especially in administration, where change was needed the most. He stuffed a handful of popcorn into his mouth, messily covering his chest in crumbs. Yep, today had been a good day. Startled by the sudden shrill ring of the phone, popcorn scattered onto the couch and floor. Cursing, he snatched the phone from the cradle. Before he could say hello, a deep voice began rapidly issuing instructions. The next day, Samantha strode into her office, startled to find Frank using his gauge on her walls again. The insistent beep, beep, beep grew louder as he passed it on the wall nearest her desk. "Morning, Frank." He grunted something, but didn't glance her way as he studied the readings on his gauge. She watched him as she removed the rubber band from her morning newspaper, confused he still had work to do. "Still not right, then?" she asked. He finally glanced at her, one of his bushy eyebrows rising slightly as his eyes took in the skirt she wore. "Nope." She chose to ignore him, opening her briefcase on the desk as she sat wearily in her leather chair. She hadn't slept well last night, and Charlie's jackrabbit sex this morning had given her a nasty neck tweak. Groaning, she massaged the twitching muscle. If only Charlie would be more gentle with her. she smiled to herself. Not that being rough wasn't a pleasant variety, but with as quick as he was finished, she never had time to enjoy it anymore. And if he was just going to writhe atop her every morning, the least he could do was be a bit more attentive with his thrusting. Shaking her head at the thought, she unfurled the paper and skimmed a few headlines, idly absorbing the news. Every day seemed to bring a new leap forward for the One World Order. States that were large enough to have more than 4 seats in the old House of the Representatives were being granted the right to elect a state president. She noted that Dr. Jones would be running this year. She flipped the pages over, stopping on an article debating the rights of animals versus that of clones. Samantha's eyebrow went up when she read that the test animals were being granted civil rights after all. PETA had lobbied hard. Clones would retain the designation of research vessels, property, really, until proper funding could be obtained for further analysis. She shook her head in wonder. That would never happen. Clones were vital to the advancement of science. It was almost distressing that people wanted to undermine that ideology. To go back to a world without clones was simply unthinkable. But to think of clones as having civil rights, that was more than unthinkable. It was pure blasphemy. Frank shifted, grunting a little as he moved around her office. Her signal, or whatever it was that needed checking, should have been fixed by now. She flattened the newspaper on the desk, clearing her throat. What exactly are you doing? Frank turned a knob on his instrument with short, stubby fingers. The beep decreased in pitch, but resounded now with low thumps. My job, of course. They sent me here. She studied him as he worked, noting the unusual jerks in his movements. Perhaps he had taken too much medication today. She took the jump drive from her briefcase, inserting it into her computer to review her presentation from the previous day. Corporate had dismissed her pleas, even though her information was accurate and should have been alarming. All implantees would be transformed by the neural net capabilities of the biochip into either mindless drones or aggressive cannibals. There was no way to tell which they would become. The only certainty was that it would happen. She wanted to go back to the drawing board with the biochip and make a few alterations that would potentially fix that issue. After a moment, the files popped up on her screen. She frowned. That was weird. She scrolled through the files in confusion. None of them were hers. She stopped abruptly when she saw a file labeled with her own name. She glanced suspiciously at Frank when the beeping suddenly increased like a runaway pulse. She decided to take a different approach. Sounds like you're doing a great job for them, Frank. The signal needs to be in all the walls, you know, ma'am. She frowned. The walls needed a signal. For what? She was about to order him out of her office when he came suddenly to her desk, bending down in a crouch by her thigh. She was surprised he didn't let out a grunt when his knees cracked loudly. She closed her briefcase, using it as an excuse to scoot her chair back as she put it under her desk, while at the same time pulling the jump drive from her computer tower and placing it in her breast pocket. What do you think you're doing, Frank? Frank leaned close to her, his hand touching her bare knee as he crouched down, moving his gauge quickly under the desk. He mumbled, then nodded to himself as he slipped the instrument into his back pocket. Samantha shifted in her chair, unnerved by his attitude. He deliberately placed a leathery hand on her knee. Again. Samantha's eyes went wide as she smacked his hand away. Stop it, Frank. He grinned obscenely. Don't worry, ma'am. I've got it all installed now. He lumbered over to the door and flicked off the light, grunting and mumbling something to himself. Samantha waited wearily in the darkness. He flicked the light back on, and the speakers in her walls let out a whining screech before erupting with an excited man's cheerful voice. "Oh, things are even more fantastic today, folks," he said. "Everyone can finally have the life they've always wanted." As the voice enthused, she realized with a start that it was the Project Utopia ad. Frank stood by the door with a smile on his lips, his head cocked to listen to the voice. His smile grew as the man went on about the future of the One World Order, and how Project Utopia would augment it in miraculous ways. This was the most important change the world had ever undergone. Not only revolutionary, but everyone would finally have the life they've always dreamed of. A life without conflict. A life that was easy. It was the American dream about to be realized. With rising horror, Samantha felt compelled to listen to the voice, understanding that it must be some sort of subliminal message meant to control. Her gut tightened as she walked slowly to the door, warily eyeing Frank. She leaned past him and cautiously flicked off the switch. Frank rounded on her, grabbing her roughly by the arm. "The sound must remain, ma'am." He flicked the switch back on with finality. Samantha swallowed, self-consciously crossing her arms over her breasts as she moved around him. She decided it best to appease him. "Good job with the signal then, Frank. Thank you." She motioned to the door. "I have a meeting. Please let me by. I'd hate to be late." He gestured for her to leave as his head cocked to better listen to the speakers. His eyelids fluttered peacefully. Goosebumps ran up her arms as she slipped past him and out into the hallway. One of her lab assistants, Marty 6 Delta, met her just outside as she closed the door, quickly behind herself. His eyes were rimmed in red, and he was clasping his hands so tightly together that his fingertips were white. He stared down at her, unblinking for a moment, before he seemed to realize that she was waiting for him to speak. "Things are... well," he said, "you really need to get down there." He swiped a hand across his eyes as he silently shook before her. She had often thought of him as a sort of closet wrestler, capable of taking down any opposition with one hand alone. To see him reduced to little more than a frightened boy left her shaken to the core. She had to remind herself that he was a clone, and that his reaction showed how difficult it was for clones to adapt to new situations. She grabbed his shoulders to get his attention. "Down in the lab?" she asked. Marty shook his head in affirmation, his eyes brimming with tears. A short whine escaped his throat. "The clones," he said. "It's bad." "It's all right," she said softly, forcing herself to let out the breath she was holding. Marty seemed to regain some of his senses as he blinked, shaking his head. "It's bad. It's bad," he repeated. She forced a smile onto her lips. "You did the right thing. Thank you for telling me." He nodded gratefully before turning on his heel and running down the hallway. And this, my darling, ends our story time for today. As always, I hope that you have very sweet and creepy dreams.